This is the Transportation Committee meeting, and it is 11 minutes after 1. And let the record reflect that Representative Johansson, Representative Munoz, Representative Dugan, and myself, Wilson, are present. And I would like to recognize our staff that we wouldn't be able to get along without. And we have Nancy Hemingway, who is our House Recording Secretary, Chris Phelan, who is our LIO monitor, and of course my committee aide is Becky Rooney. And before we start, if there's anyone, oh, and here comes Representative Johnson. Thank you very much.
Delayed representative.
And please turn off your cell phones completely off. If you just put them on vibrate, it interferes with our technical equipment here, our technology equipment. So we have one bill on our agenda today, and that is House Bill 114, titled Use State Transportation Facilities for Disaster Aid. And this will allow the governor to use the state transportation to provide aid to Alaska communities in times of imminent disaster. And Representative Ramirez, would you like to come forward and introduce your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We're glad to be before you today. I will share with the committee that four of the co-sponsors sit on the Transportation Committee, so we're grateful for a timely and prompt hearing from you. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm available to answer questions to Dana Strumman, who just joined the Alaska Legislature staff in January, is going to present this bill. So I'm available for questions and would be happy to fill in any blanks, but she's quite capable.
Okay, thank you. Dana, would you state your full name again and then proceed with explaining the bill?
Absolutely. My full name for the record is Dana Strumman, staff for Representative Ramirez. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for hearing House Bill 114. To give a little bit of background on why we're adding this additional step to provide compassionate aid by state-owned and operated modes of transportation in times of imminent economic disaster. As many of you are aware, as you are sponsors on this bill, about the second week of January, through the media, the village of Umanik started circulating their issues in regards to high oil and gas prices, paired along with the extremely high prices in the grocery stores. And so we're dealing with an issue in these villages where people were having to make decisions between heating their homes or getting groceries. So as these, as the Umanik case kind of made the media, we had some groups in Fairbanks, like Zion Lutheran Church. Representative Ramirez is very good friends with some of the head of the organizations there, and they started raising over 1,000 pounds of food for the village of Umanik. And many other private organizations did the same. We just had the connection with Zion Lutheran, and the issue that came across in them raising this much private donations was that of all the cash donations, about 30 to 40% of that was going to have to go to transportation. So obviously, if you know a Crisco is $18 in the village of Umanik, we're dealing with the issue of getting it out there and having to price accordingly. So these wonderful organizations who are working hard to provide resources of relief for these villages like Umanik were having to sacrifice some of their own funds and get transportation out there. So the issue that arose to that actually led to us working pretty hard through Representative Ramirez's office on getting over 4,000 pounds of food to then Kotlik. Umanik had quite an overpouring of private donations, so we focused on one of the other villages. And now moving forward, we're working with over 11 villages. So obviously we see that this is an issue that has spreads not only just to Umanik, who received that media attention, but it also spreads all along Western Alaska. So that's a little bit of background. And just so you know, as far as the 11 villages, that list is because each of these 11 villages, a member of the Tribal Council has written specifically to the Department of Commerce asking for a request to be recognized for an economic disaster, and that has not been done so yet. So as of right now, we're working on private organizations such as faith-based organizations in the communities of Fairbanks and Anchorage. And the idea is, you know, working through transportation on trying to find a way for the state to be able to aid in this transportation using modes of transportation such as Department of Public Safety, which, if you guys aren't aware, helped us with the back end of delivering over 4,000 pounds of food to Kotlik last week or 2 weeks ago. And they flew from Bethel to Kotlik, which was very helpful, but it was kind of a last minute, almost a private donation of sorts, because they weren't utilizing their planes at the time, so they offered their resources. So what House Bill 114 does is twofold. You can look at it as, it one, allows these nonprofit organizations to utilize all donations towards the actual relief, whether that be medicine, food, supplies of any sort, and then also it prevents the idea that hands are tied because an economic disaster hasn't been declared, but yet we have so much state-owned or operated transportation modes that we could in fact utilize to at least reach out that helping hand and help these organizations who have worked so hard to try to get out relief to the villages, for instance, but in other instances of imminent economic disaster. So I welcome any questions, and Representative Ramirez is here as well, if you guys have any.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't want to put you on the spot, and maybe the representative can help here. There was an article in the paper in Anchorage about in the 80s where villages didn't have a good caribou hunt, and the state came in and flew the meat to kind of supplement. So I'm wondering if this is really needed. Do we not have the ability to do that now, or what's different from 1980 to 2009? So what's changed, or what's different, and do we really need this?
Yeah. Well, I can start, and Representative Ramirez, you can. Yeah, through the chair. Sorry, first timer. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, you can definitely add if I'm not adequately answering this question. But I think what we're recognizing is that there are absolutely instances where it needs to be analyzed whether or not, for instance, this is really a situation of imminent disaster. So I understand where the question, and obviously looking back, we've had conversations where the Department of Commerce actually has people on the ground trying to determine what those actual needs are. So I think it, in tandem to what the Department of Commerce has already done, and while an economic disaster has not been declared, it's the idea that there's a recognized need for help, and that is a way that can help without using the total protocol of an economic disaster. So really this would be the first step prior to an actual economic disaster, if you want to expound on that at all.
Madam Chair,
follow up, Representative Johnson.
I guess what I'd like to know is what's different. I think it was 1980 when Trooper aircraft were used to fly meat between villages because the caribou hadn't arrived early and there were people that were hungry, and today when we can't get food for any reason, and why we need this, I guess is my question.
Why it's not happening?
Yeah, if it was good then, what's changed since then? And maybe the representative can answer that. If.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Johnson. I appreciate Dana introducing this bill. It's probably a good idea because I'm...
This is Representative Ramirez that's speaking.
Sorry. Representative Jay Ramirez, District 10. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, it's good that Dana introduced this bill because I'm a lot more plain spoken. Frankly, I regard this as the drip, drip, drip of Governor Palin's Hurricane Katrina.
Now, brief
yes,
at ease.
Ma'am. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I can't explain why we are not addressing the need in Western Alaska. It troubles me deeply. The member from the other body who represents the district flew out with me out to that area last Sunday. It saddens me greatly. I've been involved in the anti-hunger relief in my community for 12 to 15 years. I've raised 1 million pounds of food for the Fairbanks Community Food Bank. Have fed an enormous amount of people. Addressing hunger to me is perhaps the lowest common denominator other than public safety and personal safety of protecting people. a very sensitive issue to me. When I asked a member who represents that district and the other body, I said, is there food out there? And this person told me while we were in a Cessna 310, he said, there's food out there, but nobody can afford to buy it. And I will tell you that that is why we have food banks in urban areas. It's not because there's a lack of food in Walmart or Costco or Sam's Club or Fred Meyer. It's that the working poor, or in this case, a large cross-section of a particular community, can't afford food. A 3-pound container of Crisco, which sells for $5 here in Juneau, sells for $9 in Nome and $18 in the village of Kotlik. I would hardly call that a luxury item. We're not talking about a cheddar cheese wheel. We're not talking about the price of sirloin. We're talking about eggs. They're $25 a dozen. 3 pounds of Crisco, flour, milk, staple items. To me, this goes right to the dignity of people in rural Alaska and a certain degree of parity and a question of how strong is our society if we treat those folks with less dignity than our own here in urban districts.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate it, and I know that you've done some great work, but I guess my question goes to what has changed in the last 20 years that requires us to have this legislation where 20 years ago it didn't seem we had to? I mean, had there been statute changes or anything, or is it just, and is it the administration? Is it different people doing different things in different spots? And I want you to I understand where you're going, but have there been no changes in law that require us now to go through this step? So I guess that's where I'm going, without trying to make it personal or
yes.
Just see why this is necessary now when it wasn't 20 years ago. Are we a kinder, gentler place then, maybe?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, my understanding is that during the Knowles administration, when there was a similar calamity in a fishing region, that often times it was felt that this governor reached for that lever with some degree of frequency, and that the legislature tightened up the parameters for being able to declare an economic declaration of disaster and tied it to the federal level of income, which was at $24,000. The average per capita income in the Western Alaska region is around $35,000 per person. If you're paying $600 a month for an electric bill and for a 1,000-square-foot home, in excess of $1,000 a month to heat that home, and you are looking to sell salmon as not only a subsistence lifestyle, but also to generate income for your household. It's hard out there. When we were we landed a mile on the airstrip, a mile from the village of Kotlik. We went to the community center. We were hosted by about 30 members of the Kotlik area, and member who represents the other body that represents that area said, how many of you received the donated 4,465 pounds of food, which came out of the Fairbanks community and from Fairbanks Grocers, and it was backhauled by Linden and carried by Alaska Airlines, and then at my request of Commissioner Masters was delivered by the Department of Public Safety, and every one of the members of that community raised their hand, and it was humbling.
Representative Johansson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ramirez, in the title on page one, obviously, lines two and three, it says during a disaster emergency. Is that status as a disaster emergency what hasn't happened? Has it been declared by the governor a disaster emergency or not? And is that the categorization that we're kind of all waiting on?
Not like a yes or no answer.
I just don't know the status, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Sir.
Go ahead.
Through the chair. Yes or no? I'm not.
Has it been declared a disaster area?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
May I follow up, ma'am?
Follow up, Representative Johansson.
And I appreciate the work that you've done, Representative Ramos. I think you know that. I'm just curious. If all of these things that are triggered in 2623020 are things that the governor can do after whatever governor it is declares an emergency. If an emergency is not declared, then page 2, lines 26 to 29 are still not available. Is that correct? Is that how you read it?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, you raise an excellent issue that we have discussed, and there is truth to that. We have tried to devise a lesser remedy in this case that doesn't necessarily waterfall cash assets into a community, but provides for a triggering state transportation assets. But your reading of this is accurate, but without this particular provision, then the only remedy that is left to a governor is to trigger $500,000 of certain economic aid into the community. So what we were trying to provide for was a provision of lesser rather than to waterfall in specific assets into the community.
We have from the Department of Law online is Mike Mitchell, and we might be able to ask him some of these questions.
Okay. I just had one more.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Johansson.
Madam Chair, this is Mike Mitchell with the Department of Law. Yes, I am here.
Okay. Thank you. We'll get to you very shortly.
And then through the chair, I know you're being very specific on transportation. But on page 1, lines 13 and 14, it states the governor may use all available resources of the state government. I would assume that includes transportation. So you're just highlighting specifically the ability to use, to deliver the stuff. This is augmenting the language that's in here because it says she can already use anything that the state owns, she or he or whoever the governor is. So is it... It's almost redundant, but is it a reason that you're specifically talking transportation? I mean, I understand it's the cost, but it seems a little redundant to me.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I don't disagree with your assessment, but I'm of the opinion that a declaration could have been declared. So I'm simply trying to address a narrower provision and a more specific reading of the statute 26.23.020 to give a chief executive an opportunity to call for a declaration of disaster.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ramos, I'm not exactly sure who to ask this question of, but if the triggering event here is a disaster proclamation, thank you, then I assume the reason there's a zero fiscal note on this is that once that proclamation is made, there's emergency funds that could be used to pay for this that are already in the budget. Am I right about that?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I wouldn't feel comfortable to speak to the fiscal note. I was pleased to note that it's a zero fiscal note, but that's not an area that I'm comfortable to speak
on.
Okay.
Thank you.
And yes.
I think we have a representative from the department that may be able to answer that question.
Okay.
Did you
get a copy of that? Pierre McHugh, come forward. State your name and your affiliation, please.
For the record, Madam Chair, my name is McHugh Pierre, Legislative Liaison, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Through the Chair, Representative Dugan, the way we see this, this is a language change. It's an emphasis on how we need to move forward as our department responds to emergencies, disaster situations, and there's a zero fiscal note because this change does not impact our budget right now, our operating budget. The way we do move forward in disaster situation, we have the disaster relief fund, which is filled by the legislature, and then if it exceeds a certain cost, I believe it's $500,000 to $1 million, depending on the situation, we go back to the legislature and ask for more funds to accomplish the mission and rescue Alaskans. So referencing Representative Johansson's statement on lines 13 and 14 on page 1, all available resources, that's encompassed in the disaster relief fund, and that way the language change does not have any greater impact into response to a natural disaster.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Our state assets would also include the Guard. Would that be their C-130s and that? Is that, I mean, so help me understand what a state asset is here. Are we talking just state trooper airplanes, or are we talking basically we could mobilize the National Guard?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, a disaster declaration does trigger the effect to mobilize the National Guard. However, the assets you're referring to are not state assets. They're federal assets. So until then, we're not allowed to use that material, manpower, training, unless we reimburse the federal government.
When you say, Madam Chair, until then, you mean a declaration?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes, sir.
Okay, so when there's a declaration, then all bets are off and everything in our inventory we can use?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just want to make sure what was state trooper planes versus the C-130s?
There's Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Pierre, I'm looking at section 2623020, and the members should have a copy of the entire section statute here in their packet. And by the way, I'm handing out another thing, which is the definitions, which I'll get to on another question, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The question I have is, normally the governor has to declare a disaster, and disaster is defined in the definition section here, 2623900, subsection 2, as basically natural disasters. However, it wouldn't include what Representative Ramirez and staff have referred to as an economic disaster. That's specifically not included within the term disaster. The only place I can find that might conceivably include an economic disaster is in 2623020, subsection H, as in hotel. And it looks to me like what they use there is, rather than disaster, they use the term, quote, incident. And I don't see the term incident defined anywhere in 2623 at all, or at least certainly in 020 or in 900. And we've had some questions as to whether this bill is necessary, because it may be have already been solved in 1980 in practice, and that's what Representative Johnson said. Representative Johansson said it may not be necessary because AS 2623020G2 at the bottom of page 1 of the bill would seem to possibly cover that anyway. Now, my two questions are, is under either of those theories, would the bill be necessary? And number two, if your answer is no, might it be necessary in an economic emergency, because the economic emergency, the term economic emergency, is not mentioned anywhere, and it only could possibly be under the term incident? And if so, should this bill really, to be effective, define the term incident to include an economic emergency? I could break that down into several questions if you wish, if everybody else is still confused.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'd love to answer your questions. Let me first start by saying that the department supports this bill, and the administration supports this bill. We see this as an opportunity to put into statute that there are other ways to help people in need in times of emergency, other than simply, throwing money at it or utilizing only state assets. There are people in the community, and not necessarily the affected communities in a disaster situation, that need assistance and are willing to provide assistance to those who are being succumbed to the emergency. That being said, we support that language that has been added in this bill and the effort the sponsor is taking here. To address the economic emergency and that language, I must defer to Department of Law, Mr. Mitchell, for the legal expertise.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's really kind of, I'm sorry, McHugh, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I should have asked that question to Mike Mitchell. It's really a legal question.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Johansson has a question for you, I guess.
No, not for you, McHugh.
Okay. Then what I'd like to do right now then is get Mike Mitchell online. Mike, you're online. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good evening or good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Mike Mitchell. I'm the Assistant Attorney General that represents the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs in the event of disasters. I've held this position since mid-2000, so I've been through a few administrations and a few disasters. The way this bill is written, it would add to the list of extraordinary gubernatorial powers that apply in the event of a declared disaster. So if you look through the existing list, you can kind of pick up that these are fairly extraordinary powers. For example, looking back up at number 4, allows the governor to commandeer or utilize private property subject to reimbursement requirements. So this would add to the list of powers, but I think I would agree that it probably is already subsumed within the existing G2, which allows the governor to use all available resources in the event of a declared disaster. I agree with the previous speakers that this does apply only in the event of a declared disaster, and the problem with the Ammonic situation, as I think was Representative Grunberg pointed out, is that a purely economic disaster does not meet the definition of disaster in AS 2623-900. In the course of this Ammonic situation, I've gone back and looked at the legislative history of the changes to that definition in 1999 and 2000, and there's a very clear legislative history that the legislature, in fact, did intend to pull back on the governor's powers to use extraordinary disaster powers and extraordinary disaster funding in the event of a purely economic disaster. And so that led to changes in the definition, which resulted in the list of specific incidents in which the disaster a disaster declaration can be issued. So it's that definition that creates the limitation that has arisen with respect to a response in Western Alaska. And in my view, just adding this number 12 to the list the way it's done would not give the governor authority to utilize the transportation resources unless a disaster can be declared under the definition in 2623-900.
Mike, I remember last year when the city of Juneau was without their normal energy, and it cost a lot more. And I think it was the mayor asked for the city of Juneau to be declared a disaster. That was not forthcoming, and I know that's different than what the one that Representative Ramos was talking about. But so there are times, though, when the decision is not made. And was it made because it wasn't it was economics, or was there another reason?
Madam Chair, I don't don't know what the decision was in that particular situation. That one, of course, was as a result of an avalanche, so the initial incident was within the list of incidents which can trigger declaration, but I don't know what the ultimate reasoning was in that particular situation.
Okay. Any other questions for Mike? Representative Ruhnberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mitchell, it seems to me that this state may, in a variety of circumstances, benefit from having the ability to declare an economic emergency. And this may be one of them. And if so, it seems to me that what we ought to look at is in section 900, another subsection under number 2, that would in some sense add another capital letter, which would be F, defining an economic emergency. Would you be able to, with some careful consideration, think of some appropriate language?
Through the chair, I certainly would be available to assist. Probably the legislative council would want to be involved in that process too. I believe that there are legislative council who were involved in the 99 and 2000 changes, and so I think there's the expertise there. But certainly, if it's the will of the legislature and administration, I'm available to assist.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Follow up, Representative Ruhnberg.
Yes, I'm certainly not asking you to do it by yourself, but it seems to me we have a variety of circumstances. The situation in Juneau, we've had economic emergencies with other things that other committees are investigating at the moment, and it would seem to me, Madam Chair and the committee members, that we might consider amending this so it could be a definition that's not only used in this, but could be referenced appropriately throughout the code. And I would offer my services if I can help draft such a situation.
Okay. Language. Thank you. Representative Johansson.
Oh, are you there?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just two things. One, for Representative Gruenberg, I don't believe I characterize the bill as not necessary. I was simply pointing out that it was redundant. I do not believe this bill is not necessary, or I wouldn't have put my name on it as a co-sponsor. Number two, I think we should ask the sponsor if he is accepting of putting language in the definition section. Are you, Mr. Ramirez, acceptable to tinkering with that portion to get where you want to go?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I think it's an enhancement to the bill. This is Representative Ramirez. Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I think it is an enhancement to this bill to include a definition under the word incident, and I thank Representative Gruenberg for that, and I think it addresses precisely the weakness that you brought up, which is to create a wedge so that we can deliver with the use of state transportation assets without necessarily waterfalling in cash. I will remind you, Madam Chair, that at the root of this bill is the desire for nonprofits across the state and nonprofits and individuals from across the state and country have come forward to assist these 11 Western communities. And unfortunately, because of the cost of transportation, it has been exceedingly difficult figure out a mechanism to deliver the goodwill of Alaskans across the state, as was the case in 1980. There was a mechanism, and it has not been triggered. And in fact, in talking to three departments, Madam Chair, the Department of Public Safety, the Office of Economic Development, and as well as Military and Veteran Affairs, it was exceedingly difficult. Although there was not a lack of goodwill, there was no means other than providing inventories of the things that could be done in the future, but nothing that could bring acute relief to hungry people. And therein lies my frustration, although I will try to articulate it a little more carefully as we move forward so as not to offend the chair. But the chair should not in any way misunderstand my passion for the subject matter.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
I wonder if, since Representative Ramirez is open to this, and Representative Gruenberg has offered his services, sure. Maybe Representative Ramirez could come up with language that is acceptable to him, and in a gracious bipartisan gesture sure. Oh, yeah. Towards the probably the ranking minority member, that we could work on this sure. From, as he characterizes it, both sides of the aisle.
Sure. Madam Chair.
I don't have a problem with that at all. And if it's all right with you, Representative Ramirez, I think we will do just that. And so we will we've got a couple more questions yet today, so we'll go, we'll follow up with those questions, but we won't move it out today. And we will then get together and with whoever wants to work on this bill and bring it back so that it's in a form that maybe will do really more or fit a little bit better hand in glove with what you want to have accomplished, because I don't think there's any doubt of your passion for what's going on here.
Through the chair, that's an excellent idea.
Okay. Madam Chair, I know Representative Dukin's had his hand up, but may I follow up for a minute here?
Well, you know, I'm going to let him, because you've offered, and we're going to take you up on right. that. And did you have anything else to say?
No, ma'am, I'm Johansson? Done for the day.
Thank okay, Representative Dugan.
And I'll be done for the day after this, Madam Chair. I just wanted to note, far be it from me to try to make the law shorter rather than longer, but the drafters might consider that under subsection 2, if they simply put a period after fuel, you might have the same effect without having to add to the long list of horribles that qualifies here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Maybe we can talk and work on the drafting on that.
Yeah, that's fine. And Representative Johnson, you had a question?
Yes, ma'am, and I think we're going in the same direction, but my desire was to not, to summarize the representatives, a waterfall of assistance into a place, but if you've got a situation where you have donated food, is there, and this may be a question for Mr. Mitchell, is there something between a declaration of emergency and doing nothing where we could say if, in fact, funds have been raised, that we can use transportation without even getting into the declaration of emergency, that maybe we could take, if it's been raised so there's no state expenditure except the transportation, is there, and I don't know what I'm looking at, and maybe that's in the definition of incident.
That's a good idea.
We just maybe have a separate level where we don't have a full-fledged emergency, but we have something in between where we can use assets, we can use the state's transportation, get the food out there that's been donated without pulling the lever on the big emergency. So
it looks like I see lots of heads being shaken, so it looks like that
and I would certainly
be able
to we'll look at that too. And I have another question.
Okay,
that I'm
go ahead, Representative,
and this
Gruenberg.
Is both for Mr. Mitchell and Mr. Pierre and the sponsor. Just looking at the language of the Ramirez bill here, what we're doing is making transportation facilities and airplanes and stuff like that available to nonprofits. From a legal point of view, and this is mainly to, I guess, Mr. Mitchell, I can see potential tort liability on the part of the state.
Of course.
If somebody else is operating the plane or using the plane and something happens, that's not a problem. Oh, I would ask, is that a problem? Is that something we need to be sure to deal with here? Because I don't want to expose the state to any greater tort liability if somebody misuses the aircraft or whatever. Maybe.
Mr. Mitchell?
Through the chair, I think that is a definite concern. I have not heard from our tort section in reviewing this bill, but I think as we look at language, we'll need to think about that. Certainly, there is that possibility if a state aircraft, for example, is carrying individuals. So that is something we need to think about and be aware of.
Look at that too.
Representative Dugan.
Madam Chair, just triggered something when Representative Johnson was talking about sort of disaster light here. I believe that the testimony from Mr. Pierre was, unless there's a disaster declaration, you can't use National Guard aircraft. And so I think that if we were trying to do something short of an actual disaster, you're going to limit your transportation assets to who owns the airplanes? Just, it's like the troopers, right?
The 200 that the state owns?
Pierre McHugh, why don't you come forward? It looked like you had an answer back there.
Yeah.
And I have a question for him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, McHugh Pierre, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, through the Chair, Representative Dugan. You're correct. We're bound by state and federal law to use National Guard assets. However, there are other pieces of equipment in the state inventory, not owned by DMVA, but owned by troopers, the DOT, whether it be boats, airplanes, you know, a King Air, you name it. There's a ability to use other assets in that fashion.
Right.
Madam Chair,
thank you. I appreciate that. I was just sort of trying to point out that I don't think you can load a C-130 here and fly it out under what we're referring to as disaster light. At this point, you need to use the available aircraft that are in other parts of the state fleet.
Through the chair, that Representative Dugan, that's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You had a question, please. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Can you please explain to me how we fly Santa Claus around the state?
That's a disaster if they don't.
I mean, is that a disaster if Santa Claus doesn't show up?
Representative Wilson.
Help me understand that.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, Representative Johnson. Santa Claus uses a sleigh and 8 or 7 reindeer. So if you're referring to what Santa Claus actually does, Representative Johnson, I can tell you in the Alaska National Guard Operation Santa Claus, where we are a federally sanctioned mission through DOD, the Pentagon, we provide a goodwill mission to villages that are in need, and we also use that as a recruiting tool, and it's justified through different opportunities there. Representative, thank you very much, sir.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I wasn't referring to the actual Santa Claus that leaves on the 24th and does, but I was talking about the Operation Santa Claus. And Madam Chair, if I might.
Follow up.
I find it, and I appreciate it's a nationally sanctioned, it's a good deal, but I find it difficult to justify that we can recruit. And it's worthy. I appreciate it. I participated in it. I've wrapped gifts. I've done all the stuff. So I appreciate it. It's something I support. But I have a problem with it being elevated above hunger. I mean, I shared the passion. So, and maybe that's something else we can work on is a variance from the DOD or something. I mean, there's got to be a way for us to work this where people don't have to go hungry when we live in a state with so much. And it's so difficult to get really so little out to the rural Alaska.
Through the chair,
now I will shut up, Representative Johansson. So thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I will not say that Operation Santa Claus trumps issues of hunger. However, due to federal and state law, we are prohibited from moving forward with any asset until a disaster declaration is signed. And your comments are understood.
Mr. Mitchell, this is the chair, Representative Wilson, and I have a question. In this, if we change this and bring it about so that something could happen bypassing the governor, I do know that our governor in Alaska, through our Constitution, is the most powerful governor in the United States. And constitutionally, if we put something in here that went around and kind of declared our own little emergency, would that be breaking any other kind of law that's set up?
Madam Chair, no, but it would not necessarily have an effect on federal law, which is what we're having to deal with in terms of whether National Guard assets can be used. One question I am pursuing with my counterparts in the Department of Defense and the National Guard Bureau is the question of whether a gubernatorial, I guess, proclamation, if you want to call it that, something short of a declaration of disaster, but a proclamation that an incident exists, for example, under the other section of AS 2623020, whether the National Guard would recognize that and authorize the use of National Guard assets in that instance. And that's something they're running up the chain in their bureaucracy, and I'm awaiting a response back on that. But long and short is, what the state can do within its constitutional powers cannot trump federal law.
Well, I'm really thinking of state law at this point in time, and not I understand that we can't call out the National Guard or at least their the planes that they use, but there's plenty of other ones around the state. So I'm talking about statewide.
Yes, it would be within the governor's authority, I guess, provided there's sufficient statutory authority to use state assets in a emergency situation. But I guess we need to make sure that there is sufficient authority within 2623 that the legislature has authorized that.
Okay. But I thought, really, the governor has that power now, right?
Well, in a declared disaster.
Well, that's what I'm asking. If it's not declared and we want to go around that, I guess we'll need your help a little bit in crafting the bill then, or at least to make sure that we're not violating some state law or constitution.
Yes, I can assist in that, and I think that can be done. But as the law stands now, I don't see that the authority exists.
Okay.
Short of a declared disaster.
Great. Thank you very much. And I do have a question for you, Representative Rammers, and
sure.
I neglected to ask you this earlier. In the 80s, when the economic disaster happened, it was because the caribou hadn't migrated that far yet. And has something happened, because I know there are subsistence rights and everything going on here too, and was there something that prevented subsistence? I don't know. I'm just asking because I myself have been in a situation where I didn't have food and we ate pancakes. I know for several that was what we had, pancakes for several meals because of that. But were there availability for subsistence hunting, or was it real bad and too cold out and windy, or they couldn't do it, or because I don't know the whole situation here.
Madam Chair, Representative Rammers. Madam Chair, the situation as has been described in these 11 Western Alaska villages is that the fish run was simply not satisfactory. And we spoke to an elder named Moses, who was from the community of Unalakleet, I believe. And him from across the hall, so he would have come from Representative Salmon's office. And he suggested in a very broad brushstroke that the problem related back to narrowing of fish runs over decades, from 120,000 fish count to 20,000 fish count. He said very anecdotally, Mama used to be able to go out to the river whenever we were hungry, and now we have to live within the parameters of very concise fishing seasons and certain fish counts. And when we talk about a disaster, we talk about in the 1980s, I think that when folks were hungry, we found a way to get resources to them, and we found a way to trigger transportation assets. And precisely the frustration that I have is lists and inventories and all this talk about help without addressing the acute need, which is what we did in the 1980s. When people were hungry, we found food, and we found transportation to get the food to the hungry people. And there was a reciprocity then, and we seem to be bound by a larger bureaucratic Gordian knot And so I thank, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, to try and assign a definition to unravel a little bit of this Gordian knot. The frustration is that we are now a global village, Madam Chair. And we have folks that are out there anecdotally who they're a little bit sick, but they wait to get medevaced out because they can't afford the basic trappings that the rest of us are accustomed to, not unlike your time chairing the HES committee, Madam Chair. And you know the pressure that gets put on the urgent care or the ER systems because people don't pursue preventative care. And that's precisely the acute condition that has the world has followed all the way out to the farthest corners of Russian Mission and to Alakanuk and to Kotlik and to Amonik. And they have, we just were out with the Energy Committee just to Noatuk, where they're paying $10.79 a gallon for fuel oil or for snow machines. And on the particular day when we went to Kotlik, Madam Chair, there was a potlatch in Amonik, which is 30 air miles away. But 30 air miles, you can't fly directly on a snow machine. You can't fly directly to Amonik, so you take the river, which winds. And so more than 30 miles each way is 60 miles, and on a snow machine, it could be a $60, $70 trip on a snow machine just to visit the neighboring village. As it is, for our trip, I paid and declared to Ledge Ethics 65 gallons of fuel oil at $6.50 a gallon out of Nome in order to make the round trip, which didn't put a penny toward the cost of operating the Cessna 310. And these people, I just read an op-ed yesterday by a member of the other body that talked about these cultures that have survived 10,000 years, but they sure are having a hard time surviving into the 21st century.
Okay, well, we really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I know Representative Gruenberg wants to work on it, and I think Representative Johnson wants to. Representative Munoz, you want to work on it too?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay. And anybody else want to? Okay, those three, and get a hold of Mike Mitchell to come up and help a little bit. And
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I hope this is a subcommittee so we can have some mechanism for getting this thing going.
Yes, that would be fine.
You.
That would be fine. And so...
Point of Chair? Munoz?
Representative Munoz.
Okay. Okay. Representative Munoz can be the chair. And we'll have the subcommittee of three. And with Mike Mitchell and Representative Ramirez. And we can expect you guys to get this all worked out. And... we'll, you can bring it back in front of the committee then when you've got the details taken care of. Okay, and without further ado, any other questions, we will adjourn.